Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Reimagining Cyber. Rob and Stan here. But before we start, we've had a series of updates on the patio. I mean, listen, what's the latest? We haven't discussed that. Is it still in process? What's happening?
No. So Rob, the latest on the backyard is that we're in a wait state. So I have everything done. I have the patio. I have the irrigation system in. But the landscaping is going to be at the end of May. So, you know, I have a functional fire pit, you know, that's all good. And I use that and everything. But, you know, I have out there, looks like sort of like a mutation of the Dune movie, because I have all these irrigation pipes sticking a foot and a half off the out of the ground in my front yard and backyard. So my neighbors are saying,
like, what's this guy?
Did he run out of money? You know?
Yeah. Finish tapping the heads off. What are you doing?
It's like, no, I need to wait until the landscaping is in, you know, and that's going to be a while. So it looks kind of silly.
You need to put a sign up for your neighbors, because you are new to the neighborhood, so you don't want them thinking.
They already think I'm weird. So yeah.
Oddities about Stan.
Yes. So Rob, that's enough about my backyard and my patio and the yard. But anyway, let's dive into our topic today. We're going to go into insider threats, what it really means. We're going to talk about the different types of insider threats in the cybersecurity context, as well as approaches to mitigate them. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. So for our listeners, imagine you're part of a company, and this could be anyone, right? An employee, a contractor, or even a business partner. Now, because of your role, you've got access to certain company assets, systems, and data. And if any reason, you know, whether by mistake or on purpose, that inside info gets misused, that's what we call an insider threat. It's like having a security guard turn against the building they're supposed to be protecting, right?
It's like the insider bank heist, right?
Exactly. And we generally have three different types, right, of insiders that we're trying to keep an eye on. First, we have the malicious insider. Those are the individuals who deliberately are trying to harm the organization, perhaps out of spite, perhaps out of profit. Then we have the negligent insider. They aren't with malicious intent. They're just sloppy, or they cause harm due to carelessness or uninformed actions. I mean, and then finally, you have the compromised insider. And we're seeing more and more of those, right? But they're not even aware necessarily that they are a threat, but they're typically being manipulated because their account has been circumvented, like through phishing attacks, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, among all these different actors or types of insider threats, the negligent insiders are probably the most prevalent. You know, again, those that are not maliciously trying to mishandle data, but they've got weak passwords, they fall for a phishing scam, you know, some kind of example of, you know, not putting the right access control. I mean, an example of not putting a great access controls on, you saw that incident. It was a big one that came out a couple of weeks ago. Sisense.
Yes.
Did you see that breach?
I did. Yep.
Yeah. Brian Cribbs, I think, was the one that broke it. He does a lot of that. I mean, he does a great job of getting early on into these.
I don't think we've ever mentioned his name before in an episode. Maybe we did, but you know, that's good for the listeners. Krebs on Security. Check him out.
Definitely.
Great journalist on cybersecurity, been doing it for many years. So definitely someone to pay attention to.
Formerly from the Washington Post, and he took his column that he did there and he's converted into this whole blog that he does now. But he broke the news, and he said that the breach originated from an unprotected token within Sisense's self-hosted GitLab environment. And this oversight allowed attackers to gain full access to the company's Amazon S3 buckets and ultimately their entire cloud environment. And as a result, the attackers were able to exfiltrate several terabytes of sensitive data. That includes, like, you know, access tokens, passwords, SSL certificates. I mean, a really bad breach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, many times these insiders, you know, whether it be, you know, again, negligent ones or malicious or, those that are, you know, compromised, no matter what type, the the way in which you identify them is observing certain behavioral indicators, right? You know, are there unusual things that they're doing, whether it be the information they're accessing, the network traffic associated with that user or their accounts? It could be something that's an action that's not relevant to their role. Why is a finance person accessing, you know, the source code repo, right? So there are behaviors that serve as that sort of that warning that something's not quite right. And you know, one of the things that's I think increased potential, I guess, opportunity here, just sort of like the way we changed the way we worked, right, Rob? I mean, the way in which we are interacting with our businesses today sort of adds to this.
Well, it really expands the attack surface overall when you think about these aspects of, right, the digital transformation efforts that have been going on for the past several years, the expansion into, obviously, as part of the digital transformation, cloud environments, the example of Sisense and getting into that cloud repository, mm-hmm. is an example of that. And just think about, you know, several years back, and, you know, unfortunately, what everybody went through with COVID. That change of now, here's really this shift to complete remote workforces and everything that had come along with, you know, what you thought were normal behavior patterns for an individual just completely blew up and changed. And you had kind of a whole new baseline you had to build upon as part of that, those challenges, right? So that's a key aspect of insider threat kind of program evolution. If you think back though, Stan, insider threat or insider risk management in and of itself, programmatically, has been around for over 10 years now, right? It was back in 2011, where it was an executive order actually that came out that was saying, hey, listen, you know, you need to ensure that we're starting to pay attention to and building out a programmatic approach to how we deal with insiders from a cyber perspective, as we're talking about it today. And so, you know, those are all kind of key aspects we just discussed around digital transformation, cloud security, and the remote workforce. The other thing though, is what we've been seeing a lot of these different attacks based off of back in the, you know, late summer last year with the casino breaches and Caesars, right, being an example, that, right, the social engineering aspect of it all. So that's part of it as an insider threat perspective, right? How you actually are getting back into these environments and some of the you know, the paths you're taking through social engineering are part of that. You know, a lot of this, I kind of package it up into there's intentional and then there's the unintentional consequences, right? Mm-hmm. So intentional is, as you were calling up before, right? It's the malicious attacker. It's just, you know, actor that's coming in, very targeted. The unintentional is that user that obviously wasn't aware of, you know, their own credentials being compromised as a way back into the environment. But that, you know, this whole change and shift and evolution, in essence, of the attack surface for insider threat programs, it's made it much more complex. If we talked about that, you know, as an area of distinction, and how do you actually start measuring the differences between that individual's normal activities to, you know, what we're now seeing because of the change in what they do. It could be their role change. It could be, again, where they're coming from, that they've moved and it's coming from a different IP address. Like, all these different aspects have to be taken into account. So there's a lot of moving parts in it, but a lot of it has to do with, you know, just having good core foundational elements in place for a program.
Yeah, I think it was around 12 years ago that I was involved with standing up an insider threat program at Fannie Mae. So when I was still, I was probably the deputy CISO at that time. I guess, you know, the thing is somewhat of a mystery to me. It, you know, you're right. It's been typically a part of organizations, risk management program to recognize that insiders could be a threat. And yet, even though organizations have been taking action in this area, there's still been like a surge, these kind of incidents. I mean, 47% surge over the last few years, and not just minor incidents too. I mean, like we were talking about some major incidents. I mean, the Panama Institute, which obviously does a lot of reports each year that people like to cite, they had one around this topic that cited $16.2 million being the total average cost to resolve these kind of incidents. And that number includes not only the direct damages from the data theft or corruption, but also the indirect costs, you know, so investigating the breach, implementing corrective measures, navigating legal repercussions, and ultimately repairing the damage of trust with your customers, right? So a couple of examples. I talked about Sisense earlier. You remember the one with Tesla? So this was a while back, but there were two former employees that leaked sensitive personal data to a foreign media outlet. That breach included information such as names, addresses, employee records, and social security numbers, like 75,000 individuals. And so that impacted Tesla's reputation at the time. They've recovered, right? They have other issues, like they're getting impacted by climate activists right now burning cars in Germany, right? But that impacted their reputation at the time. Another example is Yahoo. There was a departing employee who stole proprietary information, minutes before accepting a job offer from another competitor. And that was, information that really could have been, giving a competitive edge to the competitor.
And I think that's where you see, maybe not the greatest impact, but definitely a significant impact is if you think back to Tesla as an example, what if those two individuals actually were taken beyond, kind of user customer information was design concepts, right? What's next to come from Tesla and getting that out there, right? So I think that, especially in the area of manufacturing, we've seen it in some other areas around, telco manufacturing and, just access into the designs of what the future of the company basically is relying on and walking out the door with those things. So those are major examples around insider threats.
But I think a couple of sectors are also more prone to these kind of attacks are finance and healthcare.
Yeah.
I mean, finance because you're dealing with money. Mm-hmm. Healthcare because you're dealing with PHI, personal healthcare information. An example of that was the Yakima Memorial Hospital. Couple of years back, they had an employee entrusted with access to patient data and misused that access and illegally obtained it and sold patient records. And so in those highly regulated industries, it's again, not just the ramifications of the theft itself, but it's also regulatory penalties, right? Mm-hmm. For HIPAA violations in this case, right? So that's another ramification that these organizations have to keep in mind is, it's not just the cost of the breach, but also the other things that hit them.
You talked about, Stan, as you mentioned about the Putnam Institute report and the cost associated to insider related breaches, if you will. Also in that report was the time to contain, right? So not the time to detect. You've detected. Now, how long does it take to contain? And then with an average of about 3 months after you've realized that there's an insider threat that's occurred or insider incident that's occurred, it still takes, close to 90 days to be able to actually contain the situation.
Well, let's face it. I mean, these individuals, especially those that are, malicious, right? Or compromised accounts, right? They probably have, if they're insiders, as far as employees, they probably have some understanding of the security controls and the environment, right? If they're external actor to circumvent an account, they are doing the discovery and they understand and learn quickly what the controls are. Mm-hmm. And that familiarity with the controls and the processes enable them to evade detection and potentially for extended periods of time, right? To your point about how long it takes to contain, even when they've been identified.
Yeah.
And so that being able to go under the radar, complicates efforts.
It does. So let's pivot this a little bit into what are some of the mitigation strategies, in essence, you can put in place to help, right? So some things that, and even the Putnam report actually calls this out as well, but I mean, these are common things you should be considering. Your educational aspects, right? So your employee training awareness, you have to give examples to them as to, these are the things you need to be aware of. This is the way, not just from a technology perspective, but also how you engage with people. Because again, social engineering, as we talked about earlier, is a key attack vector. Especially. So again, training, awareness, monitoring tools, right? So, security incident and event management tools, XDR solutions. So, how do you have visibility across what's happening in your environments that look, as a way to detect unusual behaviors? Another one they called out was around privileged access management. So providing more strict controls, access controls around privileged users. So that would be typically more your administrator type of functional roles.
But let's face it. One of the challenges is just the over entitlement.
Yeah.
Of users, right? The fact that many times that review process of ensuring that users only have the entitlements they need for their role is not necessarily as rigorous as it should be. And therefore you end up with users with privileges or entitlements to do things that can do harm. And it's not necessarily important for their role.
Right.
So you definitely have to be on top of that.
You do. And then, you know, that actually is a great area of like identity governance, being able to provide, you know, visibility to who has what entitlements, you know, should they, shouldn't they, make the decisions, push the button to obviously change that, especially if their role has changed. I've seen examples, especially in the higher ed space, where, you know, there's the researcher's side has to have complete access. Well, at least they believe they have to have complete access, right, to everything and anything.
You're not going to constrain me. Yeah. Don't constrain me.
The other thing that's a growing area of interest is around ITDR, right? So identity threat detection and response. And this was called out as well, because it's a great principle of how, it's more of a framework-based approach, but it's a great principle of how you have kind of the aspect of prevention specifically focused on the identities, right? And so what is it that we're doing to control the identities, access into the environment, to validate they are who they say they are, the things we just talked about, has their role changed and they should have different types of entitlements into the organization and the specific applications. So that's fine. That's more the preventative kind of control mechanism of ITDR. The secondary aspect is now more that detect and response piece, right? So now you see that there's something that's going on. It's an additional, you know, layer of defense or set of defenses in essence that come into play that give you ways to identify that there's something that seems to be a bit off. Again, it could be behavioral. It could be leveraging things where you map into the MITRE ATT&CK framework as an example, which we've talked about in previous episodes. So MITRE ATT&CK framework is a great way to be able to start looking and identifying your different TTPs that the attackers are taking. So tactics, techniques, and procedures. And so you have good visibility, awareness of some of the different things that the adversary may be attempting to do, and therefore your detection and response capabilities would be able to help kind of flag those for you and pick up on, you know, again, where there might be something that could be an insider risk or insider threat type of concern to deal with. So I think, you know, those are some of the different mitigation strategies that are called out that are important and key principles to consider. One of the things we can also, again, add in the show notes is mapping it back to the MITRE ATT&CK framework link. So you have some principles to kind of go better educate yourself there and help with some of these different mitigation strategies, if you will.
MITRE has also, I think, created a knowledge base around insider threats. So I think, you know, again, that leveraging of a ATT&CK framework with the specific tactics of insiders is very valuable as you're looking at your program and what you need to detect. Hey, so I want to share one incident that has top of mind for me. I was just at the Linux Foundation North America Open Source Summit last week in Seattle, and I had a chance to present some findings on Forrester survey, the one we covered back in episode 88. So we covered it back then, but had a chance to talk about it there. And even though I was only there for a day at the conference due to other commitments, I had to travel out of Seattle. I caught the keynote, and one of the things they talked about was this XZ exploit. Yeah. And for those that don't know, it's a critical vulnerability within the XZ compression tool. And it was unearthed by Andres Frund, who is a Microsoft researcher who's not typically involved with security at all. And this ATT&CK certainly was creating some buzz because it certainly highlighted some of the complex and protracted tactics of infiltration employed by malicious actors within the open source community. It certainly is a software supply chain kind of ATT&CK. It reminds me of SolarWinds, but that was to a proprietary, you know, company, right? But in this context, it's open source.
Right.
It is an example, though, of a malicious insider threat. Cause this, you know, it was orchestrated by an attacker that only known as Jai Tan. They don't really know who was behind that name. but involved, you know, the discrete insertion of malicious code into the XE project's test scripts, which during the build process was incorporated into a library responsible for compression operations. And the RCE, or the remote code execution, would activate the download and execution of malicious payloads upon connecting to an SSH server. Mm-hmm. And obviously that would be, you know, substantial threat to any connected system. And Frund, this Microsoft researcher, he stumbled upon this XE exploit. You know, he was just conducting routine maintenance and he noticed unusual behavior. It was slow. Yeah. And, you know, as far as the SSH process, and that led him to investigate. Fortunately, he was a curious guy.
Thankfully.
Right. I mean, initially he just dismissed it as it's just, you know, hey, I'm jet lagged, you know, blah, blah, blah. But he went back and looked into it, and his keen observation and deep dive into the utility's code revealed the exploit. And he obviously swiftly raised the alarm about the vulnerability and potentially he averted a significant disaster. I mean,
oh yeah.
But this Jai Tan, and again, we don't know who to attribute it to ultimately, but the method of building trust and credibility over several years mm-hmm. exemplifies the challenge in detecting and preventing these types of insider threats. So that subtle and methodical approach is really tough.
It is. It is. And I think, you know, so that lends to, as we've been talking, this is not only a technology issue, right? There's that trust. There's that factor of the social engineering aspect that comes into play. So this is all part of, you know, true, you know, insider threat risks that are being seen out there, been going on for many, many years, just another avenue, obviously, through the cyber realm. But we covered it, right? We covered, as you called out, Stan, the different types of insiders, kind of how you categorize them, if you will, mm-hmm. how things have become even that much more complex and things have evolved, the impacts from a financial perspective, the mitigation strategies, some different thoughts on that, different use cases, examples we discussed, you know, some things to consider we've already called out. So definitely the MITRE insider threat TTP knowledge base that you referred to that's available mm-hmm. out there, take advantage of it. Carnegie Mellon years ago actually came out with an insider risk program as well, kind of, you know, what the key attributes are you should consider as part of a program. Now they've actually, in conjunction with CISA, come out with the insider risk mitigation program evaluation. Again, we'll link into the show notes so you can take a look at. It's a pretty solid resource to take advantage of. And then from my perspective, you know, one thing that I've seen across the years, Stan, is where insider threat programs have not been successful has been more so where it's only been driven from the technology side. It's only been driven from like the cybersecurity organization, and they forgot to go get the buy-in from legal, HR, you know, and now
privacy.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, it really is cross-functional.
It really is, because now you're dealing with insiders. So you could be like, hey, listen, no, that's really an actual employee that is not doing anything wrong, as you discussed, one of the three kind of aspects of an insider. But you're looking and understanding what they're doing. So there's an aspect there you have to take into consideration. And then when it's something that's real as a attack vector, and you need to actually go through and deal with the formal investigation, prosecution, and the lawful approach, right? So they all have to be connected and bought into it. So that's, I think, a key aspect, is making sure that the stakeholders are truly involved, bought in, and all connected as to what you're trying to accomplish with the insider threat or insider risk program.
Well, I mean, again, the technology could be some kind of machine learning that helps you identify anomalies, right?
Right.
And that's all well and good, but you're typically going to have to be reaching out to the other organizations to say, is this employee's behavior something that you're familiar with?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're reaching out and there's like, you know, they're not really in the context of why are you doing this, then you may get blowback because of that monitoring, even though that's something you as an organization typically have the authorization to do. So you want to leverage the tools to help identify those anomalies, but you have to have the relationships and the understanding of why. As you follow up, because you inevitably have to follow up and confirm that this behavior is not part of their role and their function. And this is definitely a potential symptom of either them being circumvented or they are a malicious actor in your environment. So yeah, I think there are a lot of tools that you can take advantage of either, but to your point, the program has to be comprehensive and pulling in the right people to ensure to be successful.
Absolutely. Well, good. I think, you know, again, this is another topic that hopefully the listeners appreciate, some sort of education that we're putting out there as part of our different conversations we're having. Something that's been going on for quite some time, but continues to get even more complicated. And some of these examples you just referenced to, I think just really shines the spotlight on it. So until next time, Stan, always good talking.
Till next time.
Hello, producer Ben here, and just a quick heads up. The next episode of Reimagining Cyber is inspired by a new book called The Shield, Protecting Seniors from Hackers. The guest is the book's author, Michael Eccles.
I recognized when I left Homeland Security and started traveling around the country that people outside of the Washington, D.C. area just are not in tune to what criminals and hackers are trying to do to them. Mm-hmm. And it gets even worse when we start talking about people who are not in the workforce any longer or people who are above a certain age. And so that's become a great concern of mine.
That was Michael Eccles. Do remember to subscribe or follow Reimagining Cyber wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if possible, please leave a review. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.